everybody. Thanks for joining us today. Frank Wassenberg here on the CX Experience. And today we've got John Lynch. He's the Senior Vice President of Sales for CCaaS Services at Serenova and the new life-size joint venture company. Very excited to have him on the call today. Kaylee, it took a lot of doing to get him on the call because, John, I got to tell you, everyone says you've got an interesting road to plow right now. You've merged the two companies. You've got a pandemic that's in the middle of the merger, or right at the close of the merger, and you've got more than your fair share of balls in the air right now. So I can imagine you're quite busy. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Frank. Appreciate it.
Excited to have you on today. I mean, you know, I think one of the things that people are kind of going to ask or want to know right off the bat is how hard has it been? And tell us a little bit about this merger since you did it, and then 3 days later they locked down the United States. Basically, I can imagine it made it really interesting for you.
Yeah, no, it's exciting times here at Serenova. You know, we spent about 6 months trying to get the merger done, working with Lifesize. Lifesize is a well-known brand in the video conferencing VCaaS as a service, global footprint. About 50% of their revenue is outside of the U.S., so truly global, 9 global offices. And they're actually coincidentally headquartered here in Austin. So Serenova is headquartered in Austin. Right there. And Lifesize is just 4 miles away. And so that made good sense. You know, as we see CCaaS and UCaaS kind of coming together, and we were looking to expand our footprint in our cloud offering, and it had a lot of customers asking for, you know, especially during this COVID crisis, you know, telemedicine, good, you know, use cases for video conferencing where, you know, people can't go into the doctor's office or are asked not to come in. And so being able to leverage video, leveraging Lifesize, and then the Serenova contact center as a service, bringing those two technologies together during this pandemic, you know, it's been a good fit. And to your point, you know, Lifesize and Serenova, about the same size, but we double in revenue, double in engineering capacity, double in, we'll be about 450, 500 employees globally. And the Serenova value proposition has been the ability to scale up within Amazon's public cloud and then scale out globally. And not only are we in Amazon, but the Lifesize video conferencing solution is in Amazon as well. So infrastructure synergies to boot. So it's been exciting. And to your point, you know, in this pandemic, while video conferencing is exploding and work from home contact center kind of helping our customers enable that work from home is exploding and we're having to be responsive. We're trying to bring these two companies together remotely, but things are going well and progressing nicely.
Yeah, I can imagine what a use case testament for this, the technology, right? Merging the two companies, using the technology, trying to get everyone on the same page right now has got to be a real challenge. I can imagine you probably sneaking away to get on that surfboard in the back of you as much as you possibly can if there was a chance to get out of the house a little bit right now, if you could, right?
Exactly.
So you're down in Austin now. The team's down there right now. You've probably had some senior leadership meetings, obviously, during the pandemic. You're trying to get everyone together. The pandemic, like it is, a good use case for the technology, the Lifesize and the contact center. Are you seeing already examples in which you guys have said, you know, this merger makes sense? It's giving us tremendous differentiation in the market already from the people that we're seeing because we're combining a CCaaS and a video conferencing supplier. Is there some sort of really planned or unplanned synergistic value that you're seeing?
Yeah, so it was absolutely planned, you know, and again, as I'd mentioned, you know, true use cases that we had been seeing over the last few years of video conferencing within the contact center. Now, you know, a lot of people would say, you know, I don't want my customers to see my agents, but you think of, you know, telemedicine is exploding even before the pandemic. I mean, obviously now it's prevalent globally. But prior to that, telemedicine is starting to really gain some traction in high wealth financial institutions, customers like Royal Bank of Canada, you know, or UBS, where they want to see their broker and have a conversation with them. So there are definite use cases. We have a customer out of Brazil that manages all the electric vehicle charging stations throughout Europe. And so imagine you're pulling in your electric vehicle to get a quick charge at midnight and you get an error on your dashboard and things aren't working. So you're going to call into the contact center. The setup time for that is long. And so it's taking, you know, to explain, depending on language barriers, explain the error, to be able to switch to video and show the agent actually what you're seeing on the dashboard, can get them charging quickly and back on the road. So lots of use cases. So the synergies, we saw that when we put these two companies together. And then, yeah, in this kind of unfortunate pandemic that we're all dealing with, you know, work from home, and that is Serenova's roots. So we started actually 20 years ago as a true cloud BPO. And so the company name at the time was LiveOps. And so what we did is we saw this at-home workforce, you know, the soccer moms and dads that wanted to pick up a shift, you know, pick up a few hours during the day to keep their kind of pulse on the workforce. We created a technology, because back in 2000, there was no platform that could deliver a call and a screen pop in a living room of somebody's home. And so
you're trying to get people comfortable with voice over IP at that point. I can't I remember those days. I mean, that was the Wild West.
That's right. And it was dial up, you know, DSL, yeah, and bandwidth, and then server, you know. And so we had to do all of this within a browser. So from the get-go, the premise of the platform was delivering low bandwidth, you know, no software to the home, a screen pop. So customers like Pizza Hut. So being able to take a pizza order, you know, and deliver that in the living room. And then the next call that agent would have at their home would be from Blue Cross Blue Shield answering benefits questions. So we created that technology, and that business grew in 2000. And again, it was true cloud, and that BPO side of the business, selling kind of that outsource agent model, grew. But then our enterprise customers like Blue Cross came to us, said, hey, we've got a lot of employees that want to work from home. Can we use your platform? And so we started selling the platform, so just the technology itself. So you had two business units under the LiveOps umbrella. And you know, about 6 years ago, the board looked at themselves and said, hey, we've got an identity crisis. Are we a BPO, yeah, or are we a technology company? And so they made the decision to divest one of the business units. And Marlin Equity, about 4.5 years ago, $6.5 billion private equity firm out of Manhattan Beach, Los Angeles, carved out and bought the platform technology. We relocated to Austin, Texas, and stood up and rebranded as Serenova. And so we have been selling, again, this true cloud, web-based, no software to download technology that you know, is very mature. And, you know, kind of our differentiator and what sets us apart is our ability to, you know, deliver, you know, kind of the quality, zero footprint, to scale. So scale up to thousands of agents and then scale out. So now in this pandemic, you know, work from home, that's the new normal. And so for us, we've been doing it for 20 years. And so all you need is a login, a password, and you can become an agent. If you have a Chromebook, you can become an agent. You could work from home, or, you know, when kind of this gets behind us, you could work from a Starbucks and be an agent. So that's the beauty of it. And not just here in the US really, but anywhere in the world. So we can spin up and deliver calls anywhere in the world and have agents taking calls, and expand. So this pandemic is really, you know, testing the power of our ability to turn up quickly and turn up agents anywhere in the world. And so
you've got to have a significant scaling issue. I mean, like, the fact that you're on AWS is tremendous for you, because that offers you kind of an instance flexibility right now. But the demand for that, hey, we've gone from all the agents here to all the agents everywhere, and maybe we're diversifying where they're coming in from and how they're coming into us. It's has it presented any scaling issues to you, or are you guys, hey, no problem, we've got it covered, we're easily handled?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, DevOps is busy, and this is on the life size side as well. And so testing there as well. So auto scaling, being in different regions all over the world, we saw Amazon was being tested. And so while we have auto scale and allow it just the elasticity and the burstability within the infrastructure, we had to spin up three new availability zones in different countries to support the capacity. So our operations team, hats off to them, on both the life size side and on the Serenova side, to be able to be, you know, kind of responsive, monitor the health, and spin up different Amazon regions to take the capacity. So we've been running, 100% rock solid on both our video conferencing side globally and on Serenova side, just spinning up agents and video conferencing sessions every single minute.
Yeah, it's funny, you get to the point now where if you ever wanted a fire test for as a service solution providers, this right. is truly an as a service solution provider test, because you take a 9/11, you take a Sandy, which I've mentioned in the past, finite windows of time in which in home or we couldn't get to the disaster recovery place. Heck, this, I mean, I've heard stories of December, May 1st, December to 2021, late 2021, right. where you could be in this kind of a social distancing kind of a thing. So it's actually really interesting when you look at the fire test that's going on right now for scalability, flexibility, using the technology to its fullest, delivering applications in real time, delivering updates to the platform in real time, all to right. at-home users. It's tremendous.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then, what we've seen is, we're selling in this contact center space. So, the Gartners, the Forresters that track it, the total addressable market globally is about 30 billion. And it's only about 10% penetrated. So there's been growth. And obviously now the adoption of cloud in the contact center is picking up steam. But now, with business continuity and, you've had these premise customers that are sitting on Avaya, legacy Avaya, or sitting on Cisco or sitting on Mitel, scrambling to, how are we going to get these agents, to work from home immediately? And so turning to cloud contact center vendors like Serenova to spin up quickly. And so we offered, and we still have an offer out there now, a rapid response program to help within 48 hours, bring agents and bring the contact centers live from home and guaranteed within 48 hours. And we've done this, many, many times. We've got a good kind of motion to work with these IT organizations, to spin up these agents. And obviously, speed is important, but then security is important. The training, ease of use, all the things that go with being able to turn on an agent within 48 hours. But large, the top healthcare company here in the US, large Avaya install base, called us on a Friday and said, we have 1,000 agents we need to spin up by Monday. Can you do that? And so,
sure. No problem.
So, to your point, not just testing the infrastructure, but testing our ability to truly deploy quickly, rapidly to 1,000 agents. And we were up for the task. And so that night, we created a tenant. We were testing with their IT organization that evening. We kind of cleaned up some flows with them on Saturday, did some agent testing on Sunday, and we spun up 1,000 agents working from home for them. And again, this is a healthcare company, and is in this pandemic, what they're saying is don't come to the hospital, call. And so the phones are blowing up. And so being able to do scheduling and just answer questions about COVID, it was imperative that these agents were up and running within 48 hours. And so we've done that globally now for, primarily a lot of healthcare, financial services as well, that we've been doing that. But testing our service delivery, testing the software, the use of the software, testing the security, all the questions, because, you're delivering these call types to the home. So they want to make sure that it's secure. So all of our PCI certification, kind of that the HIPAA questions that come up and arise by compliance are checked. And then you got the infrastructure where it's just.
That's been a lot of the questions we've got. Yeah, that's a lot of the questions we've gotten is that how do I get my guys to be compliant while they're at home? How do I get my guys so that we're not handling information sensitive on the same laptop that their kids play Fortnite on? How do we do that?
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. And again, back to our heritage, our roots as a BPO, we've been doing this. Work from home is what we've been doing for 20 years. And so this is second nature for us. And so now being tested, to help keep the world working, and help facilitate business continuity, while it's, it's bittersweet, it's exciting for us because it really allows us to prove ourselves and show the world that we have a technology that's proven, that's stable, that's secure, that's globally resilient and can scale out globally. And so many use cases and you know, really, really proud of our team, engineering operations, service delivery, support, to really help kind of facilitate, you know, and, you know, again, in the spirit of keeping the world working, it's been, you know, exciting times on that front to really do our part.
So I've seen a lot of these 48-hour stories, right? And 1,000 users for healthcare is one of the more powerful ones that I've heard. It's actually really exciting to hear that kind of adoption. A couple of questions that brings to mind. You know, one, was it someone you were talking to for a long time and they were considering it? Or did they just, no, fire drill, we've got to move? I'm very curious to see that switch that went off in someone's mind.
Yeah, good question. It was both. So a lot of partners. So we have a lot of partners that sell premise and are moving slowly to the cloud. And so they got, you know, especially the Avaya resellers and the Cisco resellers that, you know, they just didn't have an answer. And so they turned to us as they've been slowly adopting and moving some of their customers. So it was just kind of an influx from them. You know, our customers, what we did is the existing customers as well, you know, they were using Cloud Contact Center, but on-prem, you know, they had the agents kind of FTEs in the, you know, in the kind of brick and mortar. Now they're going to let them work from home. They had a lot of questions. So we hosted daily webinars to our existing customer base on how to work from home and kind of best practices and worked with their IT organizations because we didn't want to deliver all call types. It was only certain call types that we're going to be able to deliver from home. So our existing customers that have adopted cloud, there are some best practices that we were helping via webinar and one-on-one. And then, yeah, the pipeline, the existing pipeline, you know, there was some acceleration on just, you know, it wasn't the full kind of, you know, lift and shift kind of move from prem and the full-blown omni-channel experience. It was,
yeah,
it was
quick, it's 48 you know? Hours.
That's right, exactly. You know, but it helped kind of move that and actually really good proof of concepts for them, you know, that they
tremendous.
Had this. Right, so that they could actually see the software in action before they actually contracted with us. So, so we're getting
and
it
they've
from,
still got dependencies and stuff like that. Like, they've still got dependencies back on-prem. They've still got stuff that's stuck there because it was a prem-based solution. So
exactly.
It's in 48 hours, I mean, you still had to got calls coming in.
That's right.
People.
That's
now,
right.
Did IT present you with some unique challenges about how to get the platform connected back to these premises-based solutions? Or were you kind of in some kind of hairpinning or some kind of other design to make that work? Because that's a challenge.
Yeah. So we would set up the phone numbers ourselves and just forward, a lot of times just forward the numbers that they had because they're still calling in, but we would set up the IVR and the call trees and the queues in our system. But, you know, we couldn't obviously rest forward the numbers that quickly. We needed to be quick. So a lot of it was forwarding, you know, and then later down the line, you know, some rest forward of numbers that would come over to us. But, we've been doing this for 20 years, so we're skilled at it. We know what to do.
Easy. No problem.
Yeah.
You don't even wipe the brow. It's not even hard for you. It's easy. Now, you've got... I mean, sales kind of gets the accolades for that, right? Sales gets the accolades for this great thing. They brought in 1,000 seats. But now project management, those guys behind the curtains, implementation, those guys are somewhat unsung heroes in that kind of a story. Yeah. I mean, that's a massive story to talk about the project managers who are there in the trenches. Once sales gets the contract, these guys are in the background. They spent 48 hours with their hair on fire.
Absolutely. And you know, hats off to them again. So it's the service delivery, it's operations, it's support. You know, it's all hands on deck and, you know, I'm grateful that we have a team that is skilled and willing, to help out and to work tirelessly through the night and on weekends to get these customers turned up and I mean, honestly, no complaints, from anybody. People are just doing it, because they know that's the right thing to do. And, you know, we're going to keep the world working and we're going to work through the weekend and get it done, you know, and then, you know, DevOps, operations, engineering, you know, you know, being able to make sure that we're delivering the calls successfully, call quality's good, and then the uptime's there, the reliability, so that scalability and the auto scaling that we're leveraging in AWS. And then it's the reportability. So insight, what's happening in the contact center, how many calls did we take, call types, things of that nature, so we can give that back to leadership within the company. So it really has been all hands on deck. I couldn't be more proud of the combined life-size Serenova team that have really stepped up on both sides, you know, because the same thing happened on the video conferencing side, just getting throttled. And again, this is not just US, this is global. So Asia Pac, Oz, Brazil, Italy, DOC, I mean, everywhere, we're having to do this. So it truly is 24/7.
No, it's gotta be now. Do you think when you look, let's go 6 months out. I mean, it's kind of interesting point right now. We've kind of been waiting for CCAS to grab a chunk of the market, right? And I'm with you. Like, I'm the CCAS practice leader for our organization. I live and breathe in it. So I can attest to the values of it. But I do feel like we're still kind of in a time warp here when hosted VoIP was trying to get going. And we're waiting for some sort of inflection point. If you go 6 months to a year in the future, do you think this has the potential to be the inflection point that CCAS became mainstream? Or do you think it's people like hugging servers more now? I'm curious what your feeling is there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, our feeling is, you know, when we get through this, and we will, that, you know, what's gonna happen when the boardrooms reconvene and the leadership reconvenes and kind of debriefs on what happened and how did we perform and what did we do? And a lot of these companies were really, the premise companies were caught on their heels and really had to scramble. And so they are going to look to their CIOs and COOs and IT leaders to, you know, to be prepared for when it happens again, because it, you know, business continuity, I think that's the theme, and leveraging cloud is the answer. So I think you will see acceleration. You know, we've seen it obviously, but only 10-11% of the total addressable market.
It's still so small.
Yeah, and the projections were, you know, about in the next 3 to 5 years, about 4 or 5 billion would move to the cloud. Pretty healthy chunk. So we're seeing a lot of acceleration, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see that, you know, kind of TAM double, you know, in projections over the next 3 to 5 years as companies look to the cloud and move away from the premise solutions, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain point where you look, like, you know, you could say they did get caught back on their heels a little bit, you know, saying, hey, I've got this premises-based solution. Now I've got to get 150, in the case you gave us, it would be almost 1,000 VPNs set up for these people to come in and maintain some level of compliance. I mean, that IT would have been flooded. I mean, the way you guys can do it, you can scale and you can manage it so quickly. Now, if you take a look at that same six-month window out, I can imagine there's a little bit where you guys had merger, then you have the pandemic and the responsiveness and everyone kind of catching their breath from getting everybody up and running. And now you've got R&D kind of running on parallel tracks. I mean, are there any sort of really cool things that you guys are going to be able to launch either as a result of what you've seen a need for here? Or is there any sort of things that you guys had in the hopper that you say, wow, thank God we had that thing working because we're going to want that now, or people are asking for it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, obviously acceleration and testing of new features, both on the video conferencing side and the Serenova side. You know, we're just launching kind of a new, more robust BI tool within CX Engage. You know, our customers, you know, they want, you know, access to the raw data and really be able to create blended SLAs and do, you know, BI has been the gold standard of reporting. And so really turning to us to get that robust, because every single company looks at data differently. And so we've got a new, you know, we've had a good and robust BI tool within CX Engage, but we really upped the game with a new tool that is giving direct SQL access to the data, so that our customers are empowered now to write their own data queries and query.
That's great.
It. So it, you know, versus, you know, having to train them on it, or you know, us having to build reports, or them not being able to put together the data the way they want to. So so excited about that. We also kind of right before this pandemic, right before the announcement of the Lifesize merger, you know, we had been negotiating with Lifesize and working on that that merger, that acquisition, and we acquired a workforce management company out of Sweden. And so ProScheduler, so we feel, you know, workforce management, you know, if you're
tremendous.
A contact center, if you're a contact center over 50 seats, you need WFM. And so we felt, you know, we had to have that native to the platform. While we still have great relationships with Calabrio and with Verint that do awesome jobs, advanced quality management, and really great global kind of hosted workforce management, we felt, you know, we needed to have this native. So we did this acquisition. And so we're integrating that now. So we'll launch that, soon. And then as well, with the Lifesize merger, we've been working on putting video native to our stack in CX Engage. And so now that's being tested. So, you know, kind
you
of.
You guys are juggling, man. You're juggling.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, lots going on. And, you know, and again, you know, leveraging this great tool, Lifesize, you know, the engineers, you know, they're banging code, they're working, they're having their team meetings. This is the new normal. And so work from home, you know, we're productive, you know, we're actually getting stuff done. And, you know, I think, you know, you work from home, I think we're working longer. You know, you're getting up and you're getting on video and you're having meetings and you're actually seeing, like, we're conversing today, and people are used to it. And I'm amazed on how productive our company globally and bringing the teams together that we've been. I mean, it's exciting.
You know, it is. I've done more video calls in the last, obviously, 3 to 4 weeks than I've ever done in my life. And calls that would it's very weird. It's a mental thing. You talk about herd immunity, but there's a herd mentality too here, where calls that I did for years on audio.
Right.
Weekly calls are now instantly switched to video. Like, everyone just is looking for that human contact. They're looking for that. I need to speak to somebody. You know, I need to talk. I want to see you. I need to see who you are. It's kind of interesting how that worked. I mean, literally calls instantly turn to video.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say, you know, the other thing that's kind of been tested, you know, on the Lifesize side in video is security. And so I think you've seen, you know, one of our competitors, you know, there's been a lot of hacking going on and some security issues with their technology that they're, you know, scrambling to catch up and kind of shore things up. You know, Lifesize has been selling into the enterprise globally. And so security's always been top of mind for the video solution. And so that's been tested as well. And so being able to kind of come out of this, you know, saying, hey, we stood up to, you know, to the security, is same on the Serenova side. Our customers, when you're talking PII data, or you're in another region, you know, you're in the UK or in EMEA, GDPR compliance, you know, all the data having to stay in region, security top of mind on both sides of the house, Lifesize and Serenova, is being tested, and so excited kind of to be able to show that to the world as well, that these combined solutions are able to deliver that secure experience and trust us with their data.
Yeah, I think when that's obviously, listen, when things start getting into the news about problems like you're talking about, it becomes a real scary situation, and everybody starts to pull back and everyone starts to question. I think people in this kind of, I don't want to call it a dot-com-y age, but I think this really easy app age where people just kind of like something because it's easy.
Right.
Where 10 years ago, I feel like people just put so much more scrutiny into security, and now it's almost like there's an assumption that security's there, and they sometimes, maybe not massive enterprise, but I see a lot of organizations kind of make an assumption that if they check it, yes, we're secure, or yes, we do some level of encryption, they kind of move on because apps are so easy to get now, and no one reads the terms and conditions, and things just move on. And there's that kind of B2C mentality that sometimes comes to B2B, and it's a danger for people to not really understand where their information is being secured, how it's being secured, how secure is your environment.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a challenge. It really is a challenge. Now, if you guys looked at, you've mentioned healthcare, obviously very secure. You've looked at high-end financials, very secure. Are there any other verticals that you look at that say, hey, Serenova, we're security focused, this is who you should be looking at? Or is there any other verticals that you have really powerful inroads with?
Yeah, absolutely. Retail, secure transactions. So credit card information. So being able to take that credit card data information and mask the cards and things of that nature, record those transactions. So that's, you know, prevalent for us. So big vertical, state and local gov, utility companies, start-stop service, You know, so yeah, absolutely. And then the payers. So not just healthcare like hospitals, telemedicine, but you know, the Blue Cross Blue Shield. So the payers calling about your benefits, things of that nature, a very strong vertical for us.
Yeah, it's some of those firms you mentioned kind of are not really the early adopters of a technology, right? You know, they you know, most of the hospitals that we work with are still kind of in that premises-based world, and they like it, they hug it, they want to stay there. So okay. Getting that move is a testament to the platform, it's a testament to the adoption rates of those things for people, because they do, they're very comfortable with where they are, they like that thought process.
Yes, so it's forced that change, forced that new thinking, and they've had to embrace it. And so, yeah, I think coming out of this, you know, in the coming months, you know, I think there's going to be a lot more comfort around embracing Cloud Contact Center, and you know, we've been able to prove, you know, what we can do. You know, what this large healthcare company here in the U.S., you know, the CIO said there is no way we're getting our agents off of your platform. I mean, just moving from Avaya and that agent experience to CX Engage, you know, the CIO is like, this is the best Trojan horse ever for you. You know, we are never going to get this off, you know, out of the arms of these agents. They won't want to come off. So, which is great to hear for us.
And that's huge. Listen, one, that's a testament. One, you got to get that guy on video as fast as possible. But two, that's an often forgotten thing, I think, significantly with the premises-based providers. It's, they all talk about ease of use, ease of functionality, scalability, blah, blah, blah. But that agent experience I've seen with CCaaS as a whole, there's a particular focus on it, where people really do enjoy using the as a service based platform. And when I looked at your platform, it just is very easy to use. The screen presentation is very simple. It's not clicking through things. It's not menu driven. It's all right there. It's very simple for people to use. And once agents get more comfortable with the platform, they're just better. They're just easier to work with, and they're happier to work with. And it translates to the clients. It translates to the service provider.
Exactly.
Now, where do you see, if you look at Serenova as a whole and you say, hey, we're trying to drive customer engagement, but we're also trying to drive agent engagement.
That's right.
I know gamification is obviously the thing that people talk about, but what do you guys see as an underlying philosophy for driving agent engagement? You mentioned best practices for working at home before, but where do you see kind of best practices for getting your agent engaged?
Yeah, I mean, so we have gamification in the platform, so absolutely, we see that as you know, a necessity for that. But the ease of use, you know, and then a lot of our, you know, tight integrations, managed package into CRM like Zendesk, like Salesforce, and so that tight integration that they're, you know, seamlessly working within their, you know, kind of their CRM or their desktop. You know, so yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, ease of use and, you know, gamification has been, you know, a focus for us, as well. You know, we are true kind of omni-channel. And so the need, and the customers want to communicate with the vendor their way. So what channel they come in on? So am I coming in on email? The agent, we give the agent the ability to switch somebody from, you know, very seamlessly from email to chat to maybe SMS, click to a video, or write to a voice call. And so it's the same agent, same experience, and that seamless conversational continuity.
Each way through, no rechanging and no explanation changing and no right. Agent shift, no media, just right through, same agent, different medias.
Yeah, so great customer experience, and the agent's able to be empowered to converse and escalate that call as need be, to give the customer back that great customer experience. And so that's been very powerful for us, you know, and again, kind of in that spirit of, you know, conversational continuity, where you're not bouncing around and you have to, you know, re-educate them on why you called in. It's just the agent trying to solve the problem very quickly, and giving that agent that power to do that via a myriad of channels.
And we're getting ready to launch a survey in the next couple hours. Hopefully I can get it out. And one of the things I'm curious about, kind of in line with what we talked about earlier, is are you seeing platform-wide, obviously I don't expect you to have the answer to this now, but I'd be curious to see what your kind of platform-wide statistics would show, people are craving kind of human contact now. Are you seeing an increase in voice traffic across the platform? Are you seeing an increase in chat? Or is one taking over the other, where people just on their computers, they want to get things done faster? Or no, they've actually shifted more towards voice communication. Call volumes have gone through the roof. I'm very curious to see what providers will come back with.
Yeah, you know, I've been in this space in the contact center space for, you know, almost 20 years. And, you know, I've heard, you know, back in my days at Nuance, you know, we were doing self-service, and voice was going to be dead. And it was all about self-service and call deflection and, you know, and voice is not dead. I mean, voice continues to actually grow. In this pandemic, people want to talk to somebody. They want to understand, especially if they're calling about COVID and I have questions, and they want to talk to somebody. They want to talk to their doctor or what have you. So yeah, voice is exploding. But just, you know, even prior to the pandemic, we were seeing, you know, voice is not declining, but we are seeing an uptick, in chat. And so having, you know, we've got, you know, integrations into WhatsApp. So if you're, you know, in Europe, you know, so there are different channels that are prevalent depending on the region and the globe you are. And so it's important for us, you know, in kind of different generations want to communicate, you know, with their vendor differently. And so some want to just chat. I don't want to talk to anybody. And so we need to offer that. And so we were seeing kind of an uptick of the digital channel. But voice is by far still the prevalent channel, for our customers.
Yeah. Social, you bring up social and you bring up generation. So it's almost like, you know, it's a layup to ask the questions, right? Mm-hmm. But social's been one of those kind of channels that stake in it because it's important for certain industries, but I've never really been a big user of it myself.
Yeah.
But in this situation, sometimes call centers are jammed up, and I've actually done a quick side survey over the last 3 weeks where out of a social, it's amazing how fast I'm getting responses back from organizations on social as opposed to just calling into the 800 number. It's almost like people are screaming from the mountaintops on social and they're getting answers quicker because they can't afford the bad press now.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and a lot of, you know, kind of our competitors and the premise companies, you know, the social channels were different agents. So they had silos. So we've got 10 agents that take this skill type and they do that channel only. Well, with our solution, we give the flexibility that all agents can be trained and can take every single channel. And so, and you allow the customer to come in and the agents to switch between channels versus it being a particular group. So that's been very, very powerful.
Well, they price it real weird, to be honest with you. I mean, it becomes super expensive to have monitoring agents. It's crazy.
Right.
You guys are doing it a little differently, obviously.
Yes, we do. Yeah, and so some of our packages, you know, include all channels. You get all you can eat, all the channels. So we have it kind of tiered depending on the customer. So we don't price you to death by every single little channel that you want.
Oh, it's the death by a thousand cuts. I want to get this. I want to get that. I want to get that. It's brutal when you start looking at some of these things. So let's go forward again. 6 months out now. You're obviously looking at work at home being something you guys had no problem. You could do easy. But now you've got people kind of going back to the contact centers. If it is, I'm just picking 6 months as an arbitrary date, but where do you think contact center managers are going to struggle? People back into the office? Do you see them struggling getting people into the office? Do you see the struggle with maintaining social distance or you know, what kind of advice would you have just based on your own industry knowledge saying you're going to have a hard time getting people back here?
Yeah. You know, I think it's actually great. I think it's going to become the new normal that companies are actually comfortable with people working from home, given that flexibility. I think it broadens the opportunity to expand your workforce cost effectively throughout the country or throughout the globe and leverage agents differently versus having to have them drive into that big, you know, contact center. You know, so I think there will be that shift of mentality that, you know what, we're actually really, really productive. So this is a good kind of 3 month, 6 month test of work from home that's forced. But I think as our customers and these premise contact center companies go and look at the data and look at, you know, customer experience, CSAT scores, NPS scores, they're going to be pleasantly surprised that there was lots of productivity and that that they can actually work from home, have agents anywhere. So I think it really helps sell that notion. You know, and maybe there'll be more flex time where people come in into the contact center, but then are able to work from home, you know, a couple days a week. So it will be interesting to see how this unravels.
If you look at productivity levels now, there's going to be a significant skew upwards after this, because I know if my wife right now was a contact center agent, I mean, we've got 4 kids at the house right now. She's working probably in 1 hour increments before they got crazy. They get, you know, right. The homeschooling is now, that all disappears. Yeah. So you have to look at it as a positive. Like, any productivity that you're seeing now side is only going to get better when Absolutely. The distractions aren't there, when the fear, the uncertainty and doubt isn't there for people. That's so right. You're right. I think your example is probably a really great case study to say productivity gains were here in the office. Maybe they're here when they're done, but this is kind of a skewed number. They should be up here when we're done. I mean, that's a great testament to this. This is something that we should Absolutely. Really think about considering. Contact center managers have to look at. Do you think technology is that's not really a great question. I think it's probably the reverse. Technology makes managing them so much better. Technology makes managing those agents so much better that you almost don't need the office with all the levels. Like, take Serenova, for example. The stuff that you give an organization to manage their people is tremendous. I mean, you've got huddle rooms, you've got the gamification tools, which are out. But what do you think a guy who's used to being in the office managing a team doesn't have to manage agents at home? I don't know what they would.
Yeah, no, they're not missing anything. They're actually, to your point, leveraging our technology. They're picking up so much more visibility into what's happening with their customers, their consumers, the performance, the quality, you know, because we still, you know, we have the quality management tools native to the platform. So the call recordings, quality management, you know, scoring the agents, we're empowering them that. Then scheduling, I mean, just imagine, you know, leveraging workforce management. Now you have all these agents all over the place working from home. You got to schedule them and having that visibility. So giving and empowering these contact center managers with these tools to manage these employees at home, I mean, they're going to want that when they move back to the premise, when they bring their contact center folks back.
So let me put you on the spot a little bit here. Sure. What would you say that if you're the director level, the manager level, or even the C-level person looking at this window of time where we're working from home, what would you say are the 2 or the 3 most critical stats to look at to where this is a proven win for you guys having these people at home?
Yeah, sure. So I think, you know, it's going to be the basic stats of, you know, the queue times. So then it's the average handle time and first call resolution. So are they calling back in? Did they get the problem solved? And then it's NPS scores. So it's the traditional metrics. I'm really excited to do the look back.
Me too.
Right? And look at, okay, we had these agents working. Here's the call type. And this is what it was in 3 months prior to work from home. And here's now the fresh snapshot, same call types, same agents. And what's the queue time, average handle time, first call resolution, and kind of those stats and metrics, and measure those. And I think there's going to be a clear distinction that, hey, it's maybe even more productive to have these agents, you know, in the comfort of their homes and less stressful. You know, when now let's get the kids back to school.
Please.
Exactly right. and then we can just kind of get our hats on focusing on our jobs. But I'm really looking forward to this kind of case study to do this look back. For sure.
Yeah, I can imagine if your marketing team's got their act together, they've started this process already, because this is going to be a big one for everybody to look back on in 6 months, depending on when they reopen it. Now, you know, I'm in New York, obviously. I've got one of the epicenters, if not the epicenter, for what's going on right now. You're down in Texas, somewhat different mentality. What's your gut telling you? Just curiosity here now, conversationally. What's your gut telling you back time? What are you thinking? When do you think we're back to somewhat of a normal situation here?
Yeah, it's going to be months. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not, you know, August, September Governor Cuomo, kind of every night.
He's done great, wasn't he? He's done great.
Yeah, he's awesome. And, his brother's got the virus, and now his brother's wife has the virus. And so it's kind of hitting home for him.
He's dealing with it magically, man.
Yeah, I think the tri-state has done a phenomenal job. And I like kind of same with our governor. Kind of leaning in and, really kind of that lockdown. But, I think we're going to be a little err on the side of conservative. But I think we're looking at months. We're going to be doing this for months. Our governor's starting to talk about, opening up and how do we open up? Because there's a lot of questions on when and how. I think we're going to be doing this through the summer. Unfortunately.
Do you see yourself going to a baseball game?
Been watching the news on that, and I know, love to, maybe having baseball without the fans. I think the players union is getting together with owners and talking about how they monetize it. Cause without the fans, I think the players make less money and,
oh darn.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, it would be great if they could, potentially be tested and they know that they're safe, that we can actually watch some baseball. I think that would be good for the world.
I thought Fauci had a kind of an interesting layout of it. It was almost crazy when he talked about football. It's like, yeah, get football going, put them in hotels. They stay in the hotels. We test them regularly, and that's where they're going to live, and they can have their football season. No right. fans, because right. I mean, I'm not going to a football game or a baseball game right now. I mean, you wouldn't get me with – it just seems crazy. No, I don't want to go. But I'd be interested to see what – it's different sides of the country where your thought process is on this. It seems pretty universal, and everyone's saying, no, I'm comfortable waiting this out. As long as Costco doesn't run out of cereal for the kids, I'm comfortable doing this, right?
Yeah.
And you've 100%. Got a 9-year-old at home, so how's he doing with it? Is he going crazy missing everything?
Yeah, he's doing video conferencing with his friends. And so we're letting him, he's loving life size, and so we're letting him use the tool. And he's a big
Kirk
golfer.
Of being the SVP, I love that.
he's a big golfer, and so golf is we're blessed. It's still exercise, and it actually is. We're out there walking. The courses are monitoring social distancing, and the cups are inside. They're kind of inside out, if you will, so the balls don't go down into the cup. They kind of sit on top.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah. So you just hit the flag stick. So there are certain things that they've been able to do, but we're out there. And so I'm out there with my son at night and we're walking. He just actually had his second hole in one as a 9-year-old on Friday. He had a 95-yard gap wedge and three bounces and went in the cup for his second hole in one. So
his second hole in one at 9?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, so I'm happy that I got my second landing on the green at 43. I mean, that's the one at 9 is amazing.
Yeah, it's cool. And, it's amazing. I've talked to a lot of people, there's no traffic now. So we do go out to the Costco's and go shopping. There's no traffic. And traffic here in Austin, like New York, it's horrible. And so there's no one on the roads. And then walking around the neighborhood, people sitting on their porches, I've seen neighbors I've never seen before because, you're so used to people coming home, they put up the garage and they shut the garage and they go in their bubble and they get on the screen. So it's kind of like the 70s. Right, where it's just people outside, and it's refreshing. So it's kind of nice to get back to that quality. We're spending more time and talking and playing games and keeping ourselves busy to get to know our families. So it's actually been it's been really interesting. Kind of forcing this has been
yeah.
Nice.
I'm a Queens kid. I grew up in Queens, New York, and everybody sits on their front porch in Queens. Everyone kind of talks in Queens, and everyone kind of – you live for that all of a sudden you have 20 people in front of your house all talking, right? I redid my house a couple of years ago. I put a big stone front porch in the front. Everyone's kind of like, it's a huge waste of money, Frank. Put that in the backyard. I was like, no, I'm putting it in the front because I want to see everybody, and we're the same way now. We're out in front. We're sitting there. The kids are playing, sitting in the chairs, glass of lemonade or iced tea or something like that, and you see people walking that you've never seen before. There's people – 20 houses down, I don't even know who they are. And I'm like, who are you? Why are you on my block? And they're like, I live 20 houses that way. I'm like, oh, okay. But hey, listen, I've grabbed up, I'm looking at the meter here. I'm at 58 minutes of your time here. This was tremendous. I know you're probably super busy. I don't want to gobble up any more time than I can. It's we my partner and I got started on this thing where we were going to have people come into our office. And 3 days before the lockdown, we had cameras, we had all this stuff bought, a new desk set up in the office to hang out with people. And then they announced a lockdown. In my living room now, and I've got my kids upstairs kind of locked in the doors so they don't come down crazy to recording. You've been great. I want to give everyone a break. You've been wonderful. Is there any last thoughts you have, John? Kind of close out. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's great to meet you, Frank, and appreciate the time. And, you know, just stay safe and, you know, look forward to catching up in, you know, maybe a few months' time and kind of doing a look back and see kind of where we are as people, you know, as we start opening up our states and see what happens in the contact center. You know, I think we're, you know, cloud contact center, video conferencing, you know, work from home, the new normal, and being able to, you know, kind of leverage, you know, our platform that we've been working hard on evangelizing. You know, I'm excited to kind of see how that grows in the future. So yeah, I, you know, pleasure spending some time with you, and I appreciate it.
You as well. And I'll give you the results of our survey that we're doing. CloudLinks is launching that survey. I'm going to get that out today. I want to get that out today. Okay, cool. And it's all about kind of the stuff we talked about today. So it's very topical for me.
Awesome.
But listen, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And best of luck to you and with everything you got going on, man. Good luck.
Thanks so much. Yeah.